Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why Christians are always so firm in their convictions. Isn't there a place for compromise these days? Especially politically, when we see how broken Washington is. Yes, that's true. Washington is broken. In fact, this may surprise some of my listeners, but I have had a change of heart. Now, hold on to your seats. I think, yes, I, Bob Siegel, actually think it's time President Trump and the GOP started working with the Democrats. Don't confirm any judge they don't want confirmed. Don't pass any legislation they don't want passed. This is the only way to have true bipartisanship in Washington. After all, seeing our elected officials work together is in and of itself a good thing. Working together always looks better and therefore is better. At least it's better than stubborn people standing by their convictions. Compromise. That's the name of the game. Just because the Democrats lost the majority party in Congress, that doesn't mean their voices are any less important. In fact, Republicans have an ethical obligation to include Democrats as part of the process, just as the Democrats always do themselves when they're in the majority. Also, I have to say this. Whenever I hear Charles Schumer and Nancy Pelosi speak, the pearls of wisdom flowing from their mouths show us how interested they are in being united with their Republican counterparts. It is quite apparent that they each have strong passion about keeping America a free country, obedient only to our Constitution. All right, now I probably don't need to say this, not if you've followed this radio show for any length of time. April Fool! All right, one day belated, April Fool, that is. So now, let me introduce a man who isn't anybody's fool, April, or any other time of the year, my good friend and rotating co-host, Jim Barrier. Jim, welcome back to our program.
You had me going there, Bob. I know that you have some background in theater and drama, and you have a flair for the dramatic, but I just wondered where you were going with that. So.
Well, you know, I had some people fooled on Facebook, too, which surprises me because I'm known to be very sarcastic. And there were times when I was wondering myself how I was saying it with a straight face. I've done this in the past. I've actually written entire articles on my column. A couple of years ago, I did a repentant speech by Obama where he admitted that he was being political and changed his positions. That one I did so well that when I wrote April Fool on the bottom, one of my readers wrote me a letter and said, "I hate you, Bob Siegel." And then when that idiotic film about Noah came out, I said, "Oh, biblically based, sound family values."
Yeah.
I just laid it on thick and then at the bottom. I said, "April Fools, if you want to read my real review of this PC of you know what, you can read it tomorrow." So you can still go to my website and see both versions of my no. But on Facebook, I just thought, "Gosh, they must know I'm kidding." But a couple of people thought I'd lost my mind. They just, I need to tell all of you, I'm a human being. I suppose I could lose my mind like anybody. I will never lose my mind that much. That much, I can assure you.
Well, I was kind of picturing as you were doing that intro, I thought, his tongue is about to poke through his cheek.
Well, it's fun.
Well, you know, and I know we have some things we're going to talk about tonight. We always have a plan. We don't always stick to it.
But, well, that's because we're both so versatile. Yeah. We're both such Renaissance men. We can talk about anything.
That must be it. But I just have to ask you on the air here. Okay, should the Republicans use the nuclear option if the Democrats continue this silliness of partisanship, of blocking a man who's maybe one of the most qualified people to sit on the bench that we've ever had? Should they use the nuclear option?
Jim, not only should they use it, but they should not wait. They should not go on another day. They should use it immediately, not just for the judges, for everything. The reason that idiotic health care bill that they came up with 2 weeks ago, which I think Paul Ryan probably found at the bottom of a box of Cracker Jack, the reason that was written the way it was is because they had to get it to the Senate at a certain time, because the regular bill, the one that they had no trouble at all passing many, many times when they weren't really in power, but now that they're in power, they somehow can't pass. The reason they couldn't get to the Senate this time is because of that idiotic rule about needing 60 votes.
Yeah.
The Democrats, when the Democrats win, we hear elections have consequences. When the Democrats lose, we hear, oh, the American people won bipartisanship. I'm so sick of it. The Republicans should use the nuclear option. We shouldn't have to listen to Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid or particularly Al Franken or Elijah Cummings. I should not have to listen to them pontificate about anything when we know how the vote's eventually going to go. Why are we wasting so much time? There's work to be done.
Listening to Nancy and Harry and company, for me, is just as bad as waterboarding might be to some of those guys at Gitmo. It's torturous for me.
Now, Jim, that was a very unfair comment to waterboarding. For you to insult a practice like waterboarding by comparing it to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I'm not saying waterboarding isn't a bad torture. I'm not even saying we should do it. I'm just saying if I had to compare the two, guess which one I'd pick.
Oh, okay. Well, it was the best I could come up with. How about the whole deal? They'll make a deal.
Now, this is where, we've talked before, Trump, my reviews get mixed back and forth. My biggest problem with Trump right now, and I'm not talking about his big mouth during the campaign, my biggest problem with President Trump, who's done a very good job keeping or at least trying to keep his promises, probably more than any president in history at this point.
Yeah.
My problem with him is he thinks he can make a deal with anybody. Sometimes people have to stand by their conviction. Should somebody have made a deal with the South? Well, they did have stupid deals back then, actually, like the 3/4 rule, and certain states let in a slave in exchange for others let in as free. But the abolitionists were not people who felt that they could compromise.
No, sir.
And so when people
sir.
Think they can compromise on abortion or same-sex marriage or any conviction that's important to them, not everything can be solved in a deal. And I know Trump thinks he's going to go over and make a deal with the Israelis and the Palestinians. Boy, is he in for an awakening. He may get the Palestinians to sign the deal, but they're not going to obey the deal.
They're not going to honor it.
Of course
not. I'm thinking specifically about this deal. They're saying, well, if you won't do the nuclear option this time, we'll go ahead and throw in a few votes if you agree to never use it. Which, I think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, I think it's very possible, and I hope I'm wrong about this, that Schumer is just posturing right now, and he's eventually going to promise not to pontificate or delay any longer or do any more filibustering in exchange for the Republicans swearing that they will not use the nuclear option the next time we have a Supreme Court thing. And next time it'll be much more crucial, because next time would tip the balance. This one just replaces a conservative for a conservative.
Right. Exactly.
Now. It's important because we'll tip the balance if we get a liberal. But this will just bring things out equally, because Kennedy, it all depends on what he had for breakfast, what he was going to vote for. Yeah. And the others were all predictable. So, and I just think the Republicans would be stupid enough to make that deal. And already, since I made that prediction, I've heard John McCain saying he's trying to strike up some kind of deal. And I'm tired of John McCain and Lindsey Graham, the reaching across the aisle. The gang of five, the bipartisanship.
Yeah.
I'm the Republican who criticizes Republicans. I'm the darling. Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I'm fed up with the Republicans and the Democrats. But the Democrats at least know how to keep on a united front with hideous actions and hideous beliefs, but they don't turn on each other and have circling firing squads like the Republicans do.
Yeah, it just makes me crazy. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on. You know, the president has already done things, I mean, quicker than anybody I can remember.
Oh, it's been fantastic.
And I think the border concerns are really important. I think the war on terrorism is really important. I think creating American jobs is really important. I think the things coming up with China and North Korea, those are really important. The pipeline, all of these things are important issues, but in my mind, nothing is more important than appointments to the highest court in the land.
And the reason that's important is because that's the only law we have left. Yeah, we're no longer a republic. We're no longer a democracy. No matter what executive order Trump signs, no matter what he signs with the House and the Senate, some judge is going to overturn it now. We've opened up Pandora's box.
That's why it's such an important thing. And it doesn't matter what bills they push through or any of that. Ultimately, that's the buck stops here is now in the Supreme Court.
And that is not the way it should be.
No.
The Supreme Court was never meant to have that much power. I know we talked about this last time, but that is the way it is.
Yeah.
So nothing is more important. I also have a problem, though, when Donald Trump, who's done such a good job of keeping his promises, goes and writes one of these stupid tweets against the Freedom Caucus when all they're doing is trying to keep their promises.
You know, I don't understand that. I think he'd be better off maybe siding with those guys than some of the people he deals with. But we'll see what happens. I'm sure that that it's going to get approved, but I just don't know at what cost.
Well, when he talks about making deals with the Democrats, I mean, look, I think somebody's been giving Trump bad advice. I know somebody who knows Donald Trump, Pastor Garlow of my church. You know Pastor Garlow, too. He knows Donald Trump. The man does sit down and listen. I think somebody on his cabinet or one of his advisors is giving him bad advice. The rhinos are trying to blame this on the Freedom Caucus when they were the Freedom Caucus and a lot of moderates were against that bill. It was just a horrible bill. But again, the problem is the Senate. I think they passed an anti-healthcare bill. They repealed Obamacare like 30 times in the last few years, but they knew it wasn't really going to go anywhere. One time it did get through the Senate, but then Obama, of course, wouldn't sign it. Now we've got the House, we've got the Senate, and that's what they kept campaigning on. Give us back the House, we'll repeal Obamacare. Then they get back the House. Oh, well, we don't have the Senate. Give us back the Senate. Then they get back the Senate. Oh, well, we have the House and the Senate, but we don't have the presidency. Now they have all three, and what are they doing? Nothing. Nothing.
There should be. There's no excuses at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be Ryan Care, or more correctly spelled Rhino Care.
Well, I hope that we're both wrong about some of these things, and we've said that before. Before the election, I remember saying, "I hope I'm wrong."
I would take no consolation in being right about this one.
Yeah.
Well, we just blew through the first segment already. Okay, my friend, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier.
Now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
You're more beautiful.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel, joined by my good friend and once-a-month co-host, Jim Barrier.
Hey. Okay, so what I wanted to maybe go over some stuff with you tonight, I was going to kind of take the contrarian point of view, and we'll try to do that a little bit, but I get people, and I know you do, because of the focus of so much of your work, but I'll get people that will make statements like this. Does it really matter what you believe as long as you're sincere? Or, you know, there are lots of religions in the world. Christianity is only one of them. Don't they all basically teach the same thing? And you know, isn't it just really boiled down to all roads lead to Rome? And as long as you're sincere about what you believe, wouldn't any religion be okay? So I wanted to kind of work with that theme, and I wanted to ask you some questions. And I did a little research for this, did a little homework, and bottom line is only about 15% of the world population would describe themselves as having no religion, as being either atheist or agnostic, but, you know, no belief system at all.
And I think atheists and agnostics are closer to Christianity than people of alternative religions.
Oh, I'm like you. I love talking to people. I meet people all the time that introduce themselves as atheists, and by the time I get through with them, we find out they're not atheists at all. They just don't like organized religion.
That's right. Yeah. Well, as for saying it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere, what if, let's bring back the slavery issue again that I brought up What about the fact that during the pre-Civil War South and in ancient Rome, there were a lot of people that sincerely believed slavery was okay? Now, I would say that if they paid better attention to their conscience, they would realize that it wasn't okay. But human beings have a good ability to rationalize, and sometimes people can be sincerely brainwashed, and they just don't pay attention to the submerged conscious. So what if somebody sincerely believed it was okay to go out and kill somebody or to be a racist? So there, a lot of racists sincerely believe that people of a certain skin color act a certain way. We don't assume that those things are okay because they're sincere. I think that a lot of times what people say is true of religion, it's just not true if you look at any other aspect of their life. When people say that all religions are right, they're really saying all religions are wrong without realizing it. Because if you were to show them that the teachings of Jesus and the teachings of Muhammad, for example, completely contradict, they would say that doesn't matter. Now, what's interesting is some of these same people, if they saw a contradiction in the Bible, they go, if the Bible's written by the same God, how can this verse contradict that verse? But boy, Christianity contradicting another religion, they don't think that would concern God. We should be concerned in either front. I don't believe the Bible does contradict. If somebody did believe that, that's a valid concern. I'd want to show them that it's not really a contradiction. The same is true with the other religions. The other religions don't claim to be one of many beautiful paths to God. They claim the same thing Jesus did to be the truth. Jesus did not say, I am a way, a truth, a life. He said, I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father but through me.
Yeah. And just as as Muhammad is the prophet.
No, not only does the Quran teach that Muhammad is the prophet, but they teach you'll go to hell if you don't believe Muhammad is the prophet, and we'll kill you if you don't believe Muhammad is the prophet. Well, or you at least have to be, you at least can't speak against the prophet, and they want to convert you, or you have to at least live subservient to them. They might let non-Muslims live in the land. So, and this is not a few nutcase terrorists that are saying this. This is what the Quran says. This is what the Hadith say. This is what Muhammad himself taught.
Yeah, and of course, I think as biblically illiterate as most Americans are, they know even less about the other supposed religions that they think are okay.
Yes, biblically illiterate. Let's invent a new word, Quranically illiterate.
There you go.
And just to show you I'm not picking on Islam, Judaism, the first command that God gave through Moses on Mount Sinai, you will have no other gods but before me. Yeah. Now, as a Christian, Jim, you and I, we believe that the New Testament and Old Testament go together, and it's really the same God. But still, if I was Jewish and I didn't accept the New Testament, but I still accepted the law of Moses, I would have to be consistent, say, Moses told us that this is the only true God. We are not to worship any God but him. So it's not Christianity that made this up. So now we were talking about politics the last segment. When politicians contradict themselves, don't people jump all over it? If somebody was taking a history exam and they got an answer right, could they go up to the professor and say, well, to me, I think it's true. Actually, I should be careful because these days you probably could say that. I feel like I'm a woman even though I'm in a man's body. Then why not say, you may have given me a C, I think it's an A. Looks to me like an A. I mean, we're practically living in those times. But to anybody who wants to still make logical sense, of course, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous with religion. So if you show them that the religions contradict, and they say, well, it doesn't matter that they contradict, they still teach nice things, what they're really saying is, we don't expect any of them to be true. So that's what I mean, Jim, when I say that when somebody claims all religions are right, they're really claiming they're all wrong. And I've used this illustration a lot. If we're just assuming that religions are comforting fantasies, well, if that's all they are, then it doesn't matter which one you are. Just pick the one you believe in. You don't like Lord of the Rings? You prefer the Chronicles of Narnia? Great. It's just a fantasy. Pick the one you want. Yeah. But Jesus didn't claim to be a fantasy. Muhammad didn't claim to be a fantasy. Hinduism teaches that a Brahman is God. They don't teach that God is some other God. Brahman and the universe are one and the same, and that's the ultimate God in the mind of a Hindu. And they don't teach that something else is an ultimate God. So these different religions are all claiming to be the only way. You can't have 10 only ways.
Right. But it seems to be the common thinking. And I'm sure a lot of people are just repeating what they've heard somebody else say, and it sounds inclusive and tolerant, and it sounds peaceful, and it doesn't bring an edge that would divide or offend anybody. And I think that's the appeal of that type of thought form. But let's go down the list here, and I know we're going to hit a break in a few minutes, but at some of the things that apparently most of the major religions have in common. First off, is there seems to be an understanding or an assumption that... Are we going to a break?
We are. Just quickly finish your thought. There's an assumption that what?
That there is a spiritual nature to man, not just the physical stuff.
Okay, that is something that religions have in common. We'll revisit that when we return.
Good.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Okay, are all religions the same? Are all religions more or less teaching the same thing? Are all religions true? Those who say all religions are true actually believe all religions are false. Here to discuss it with me, Jim Barrier, welcome back.
Thanks, and I'm going to steal that line, I will use the rule. The first time I...
Do I get my royalties weekly or monthly as you steal this
line?
Yeah,
very weekly.
And, weekly. Oh, I get it, the W-E-A-K kind of weekly.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, you saw what I was doing there. I will give you credit the first time.
Say, and then after that, it's yours. Yeah, I know how it works.
No, it's three pages. The first time is, Bob Siegel says, da-da-da-da-da. Then the second time you say, one radio personality says, and then after that, then it's just mine.
Oh, I thought you were going to go, as that genius who I don't even need to mention anymore says. But, you set it up and tee it off any way you want, Jim.
Well, that's a great line, and it's really true. So there is this understanding in most religions that there is something more than just the physical stuff. As Yoda would say, luminous beings are we.
Yes. In fact, a lot of the Star Wars stuff comes right out of Eastern mysticism.
Totally, yeah. And I think Lucas actually kind of believes in something along that model. But there seems to be this understanding. People know there's something more than just this stuff. There, our culture, we're obsessed with paranormal and the movies, the TV shows, everybody has this fascination with things, as long as you don't attach any moral obligation to it.
Right. Or perhaps a moral obligation such as you're morally obligated to kill in the name of Islam. That kind of moral obligation.
Or even accountability, but there is that, and I've walked through this with a number of people, and I'll ask them questions, and they'll really come to a point and say, yeah, I know that there's something more. We're going through this right now. It's been a difficult thing. My sister-in-law and her husband have both been hit with cancer in the past year, and we've been praying for them, and they're well off. They go to the Mayo Clinic regularly, and those folks are highly trained and great at what they do, and they're both recovering.
That's wonderful to hear.
It's great, but we've been praying, and my brother-in-law particularly has been very resistant to anything about the faith. And the last couple of times I've been able to talk with him, it's been just awesome because he says, I know, I have to tell you, the things that you've been saying to me, I know they're true. And it's a huge step for him to admit that. And meanwhile, my sister-in-law, we've diverted here, but it's a good story. She has made such a tremendous profession of faith. And this past week, she talked to Leslie and said, I think I need to get baptized. And I said, when you start talking like that, there's really something going on.
That's a testimony to your faithful prayers. That's wonderful, Jim.
Well, and a lot of it is of them watching Leslie and her walk of faith for over 30 years
I think how we treat people and the way we say things to people can be more important than what we actually say.
Most of the time. So anyway, that is a great. But the fact that Bruce is acknowledging that there is a spiritual side of things, and he says, I can feel it when you guys are praying for me. Now, that it's going to, you know, some people don't like that kind of language. You know, it's not about feelings. But what he's saying is he senses, he knows there's something happening outside of himself, something bigger than him in this whole thing. And so there is an understanding for most people that there is something more to me than just the flesh, blood, and bone. And so most religions will teach that on some level, and certainly Christianity does.
And I think one of the reasons for that is the Bible tells us that God has put eternity in our hearts.
Yeah.
We were created to have a sense of that. So no matter what somebody might learn in some classroom about God not existing or pragmatism or whatever it happens to be, there's a part of their soul, which they don't even believe exists, that is bearing witness otherwise, but it's happening subliminally, unless they really take time to reflect on it.
And it takes some skill, it takes some prayer, it really takes, I think, the Spirit of God to open things up for people to move closer toward that. Now, the next thing, this is kind of a tandem thing, this is a progression, this whole list I have, then that moves us to there is a great sense within religion that there is something after this body dies, whether it's heaven or nirvana or reincarnation or whatever place is paradise. There is, in most religions, some understanding that your existence doesn't cease when you stop breathing.
And I think that's another thing that we're born with. So I was raised as an atheist, as you know.
Yeah.
And I remember even as a little kid, when I would think about dying, I would think the idea that I'm never again going to have a conscious thought, but the universe is going to go on for all of eternity, that was absolutely incomprehensible to my thinking.
Yeah, it's troubling for someone who...
Well, it's troubling, but it's incomprehensible that that could even be true. It just something bears witness that we are going to go on.
Yeah, and I think it's back to what you said. I think there's something that God has placed in the human condition that it wants to move us toward those understandings. We just have to block it out and make a decision to not listen to those things. As Jiminy Cricket said in Pinocchio about the conscience, it's that still small voice that no one listens to.
Yeah, and you know what? I love Disney's Pinocchio.
Yeah.
But if I may, in the book version of Pinocchio, the original novel that I read as a kid, in a very early chapter, I think it's chapter 2, Pinocchio smashes by stepping on Jiminy Cricket and kills him because he didn't want a conscience.
Well, that's probably more realistic for most people.
Yeah,
I love the Disney version.
Oh, well, of course, the Disney version has the happier ending.
So we have this, you know, that there is something... after life, and certainly we believe in the resurrection, and we'll be celebrating that in a few weeks. I still use the word Easter because I don't have a problem with that, but you know, we'll, you know, Resurrection Sunday, it's to me, it's the most important part of the Christian faith. As Paul said, without the resurrection we're very miserable, and so we believe in that as Christians. Now, this is the next one that I want to talk about. Most religions have some version of enlightenment, coming to an understanding, seeing the light, or having this aha, this awakening. There, that seems to be a common thread in most religions.
Yeah, and yet there's not a whole lot of evidence that too much of human history has been very enlightened for all this enlightenment that they're claiming.
No, not much.
Okay, we'll be right back. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda, but you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear, but they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Listening to the Bob Siegel Show with Jim Barrier.
You know, I love when you do the promos for Skyline, because that's where I first became a follower of Christ. And the other night, I attended a banquet. You're familiar with the Justice Foundation. I think we've kind
of got
you connected with those folks. And they had their annual fundraising banquet. And I go every year and I sponsor a table, and we have people from our church there. And lo and behold, as a pastor and a sponsor of a table, my gift was a book by Jim Garlow, Tough Answers for Today's Questions.
Oh, yeah, that's his latest book, and it's really good.
Yeah, so I just got it. I can't wait to read it, and possibly on this radio show we might address some of those tough questions. So I'll have to prep first. I haven't read the book.
Okay, yeah, it's very
looks
good.
Like something right up my alley. So there is enlightenment. Now, I have to tell you this story. I had a young man come to one of our functions, and he said, "Pastor Jim, you're going to be mad at me." And I said, "Why would I be mad at you?" And he said, "Well, I've decided to become a Buddhist and not a Christian." And I said, "Okay, tell me why." And he said, "Well, somebody gave me this book about Buddhism. I started reading it, and he says, I think there's just more truth there, and I think the whole thing, you know, that you need enlightenment, and Christianity is all about people teaching traditions and catechisms and forcing religion down someone's throat, and it's things they've learned from somebody else, and it isn't pure enlightenment." And I said, "Now, wait a minute, you're telling me this because you read a book that somebody gave you."
Yeah, exactly.
He couldn't see the irony of
Well,
that.
Not only that, but when somebody... I interviewed a Buddhist on this show one time, or actually a Christian seminary student who was considering mm-hmm. becoming a Buddhist, because he went out and visited a Buddhist priesthood, and mm-hmm. he says, they have a lot of compassion too, just like Christians, so why can't they be true? And I said, "Well, you know, just because somebody feels compassion doesn't automatically mean that everything they believe is true." I think the people that say this, Jim, although they may sincerely believe that they are Christians, they don't sound like people who've really had an encounter with the Holy Spirit, an encounter with the real Jesus Christ. And that doesn't mean we should jump all over them, but I think these are people that, because if you've really met God, then you know that he's God.
Yeah. And if you are a serious student of the Bible, and you and I are two of the people left that take that seriously and embrace it, there's just a lot of stuff in there that if you come to the conclusion that those things are true and that those writers were accurate and that the words of Jesus are true. I love the C.S. Lewis thing. You know, Jesus was either a lunatic or else he was just a con man, or else he was telling the truth. And the problem with most nominal Christians today, in my experience, has been they really are not familiar with the scriptures at all.
No, and to defend them a little bit, it's not their fault, because sometimes they'll go to their pastors mm-hmm. and say, "Well, how come the Bible says the world is only 6,000 years old, but evolutionists teach that it's billions of years?" And not that I believe the age of the earth is one of those things we need to die for as Christians, but they'll ask a question like that, or about Noah and the flood, or why is Jesus the only way to God? How can a loving God send people to hell? And a lot of times what they hear is, "Well, you need to just accept it by faith." Well, I'm sorry. You can't get up on Sunday morning and preach that Jesus is the only way, and if you don't accept, you're going to be separated from God from all of eternity. And then someone says, "Well, I don't want to be separated from God. But on the other hand, I don't want to give my life to something that might not be true. Help me out. Throw me a bone. And we just tell them to accept it by faith. That's malarkey.
I hate that answer.
Yeah. On the other hand, there is no way that a Buddhist or a Hindu could say, here's how we know it's true. They don't even attempt to tell you anything other than that you should just accept it by faith. Your blind faith is the conduit to your enlightenment, supposedly. The Bible can be backed up by archaeology, corroborative history from the time, fulfilled prophecies, and then ultimately, 1 John, this is how we know him, by the Spirit he has given us. And that doesn't mean a mere feeling or a mere mind trip. It means an actual physiological encounter with the Spirit of God, where God is speaking to us.
And it's a person, not just a force.
Yes, it's not a concept.
Yeah. So those are things. Now, most religions have some expression of prayer and meditation. And I'll say this, I'll talk about meditation in church, and I'll get some eyebrows, and I'll say, you know, meditation isn't evil. I'm not talking about transcendental meditation. I'm talking about meditating on the person of God, meditating on the law, meditating on his word. We're encouraged to meditate, not empty our minds.
Exactly. That's an important distinction, because Eastern philosophy meditation is we empty our mind and then chant mantras so that the gods out there in the cosmos can take over our mind. Christian biblical meditation means we're thinking about God. We're thinking about his commands. We're thinking about our life. We're meditating on God's word. One is an active mind. The other is a passive mind. That's the difference. But they both use the words meditation. So just like they both use the words God, and yet to the Hindu, God didn't make the tree. God is the tree. So you can use the word God. You could use the word meditation. You could be meaning completely different things by it.
And these are the things that if people really want to know the truth, they should study these things. I'm not threatened by reading other religions or about them. You know, and when I was young and much the same as you, I wanted to know the truth. And so I would look at these things. And when I came face to face with the claims of Jesus Christ, it only left me, you know, two decisions to make, to reject it or accept it. But back on our common threads, there is some expression of prayer. People pray, and sometimes they're just rattling off things, or, you know, a mantra, or repeating things, and, you know, saying, I won't pick on anybody, but, you know, phrases, and they repeat them over and over again. And the truth is that some of that has crept into the church. That's one of my problems with what we used to talk about. You coined the term the worthless prosperity gospel. You know, people would think, well, if I just say these right words, then God has to give me what I want. And that's incantation.
Well, that's Aladdin and his lamp. That is a fantasy. Yeah. That's not what the Bible teaches at all. Although there are a lot of Christians that take verses of the Bible out of context and try to teach that. It's called the prosperity gospel.
Yeah. So we have prayer. And for me, this is one of the things I was telling you about my sister-in-law and her husband. And they were, Leslie and her sisters were raised Catholic. And so when her sister started, you know, venturing down this path in the last several months, you know, she told Leslie, well, I've been praying. She said, I can't remember all of the prayers. And Leslie said, you know, you don't have to recite prayers. You can talk to God just like you're talking to me. And she said, really? And so she does now. And she'll be driving along in the car, and she'll start talking to God. And I think, that's so healthy.
One of these days, by osmosis, she's going to discover that she just already has stumbled into that relationship with God.
It's an awesome thing.
It sure is.
Break?
We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. they accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
Bob Siegel's fantasy novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, is now available on Kindle, Nook, and in print copy. Check out some of the wonderful customer reviews on Amazon.com. Reviews such as this one. Wow, what an incredible story. Well written, believable characters. The story takes twists and turns that keep surprising the reader. Although it is written from the perspective of a preteen, it is most appealing to an adult. Takes one back to those feelings and longing for adventure. I can't wait for the sequel. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Jim, my friend, we're down to our last segment.
Yeah.
Is it a big list you still have left? Do you want to come on next week to finish this so you don't feel so rushed?
No, because I want to get to the punchline.
Okay.
I'm gonna lob a nice one right over the plate for you. But some of the other things that I will mention, most religions have some teaching or understanding of morality. There's right and wrong. There's things you do, things you don't do. And there are consequences to that if you don't do the right things. And most religions have that, varying, applications of that, of whether it's hell or judgment or karma. And so they all kind of have that sense that there is an obligation to do what's right. Most of them deal with the issue of suffering in the world. Of course, Buddhism certainly spends a lot of time dwelling on that. And then that there is justice that needs to take place. And so I think those are all of those things we've talked about. Religions basically embrace all of these tenets, all of these principles in some expression or another. What I want to ask you now, and we'll do this for the closing part if we may, what do you say to someone who says, Bob, what makes Christianity different? What is the standout thing that makes what you believe and what you claim Jesus said and is, and what makes that different from all of the rest of the religions? Why is Christianity unique?
Well, I would say two things, actually, but they're related. So in a way, they're like one thing. I would say, unlike the other religions, we are not so much teaching a religious system of thought to be taken by blind faith as much as a relationship with God. But I would also say that this relationship is not possible without God forgiving us of our sins. And the way he was able to forgive us is that he became a man. And in 33 AD, when he was nailed to the cross, in some way where we can't explain the metaphysics, he took on our sin, and his death was as if we died. It is as if God says, I want Jim Barrier in my kingdom, but Jim Barrier is a sinner. But I love Jim. I want to be merciful to Jim. So I'm going to destroy Jim and recreate a brand new Jim. Not reincarnation, But the same Jim, the same consciousness, I'm going to put in a glorified, resurrected, sinless body where he will sin no more. And yet I still love Jim so much that I don't even want Jim to have to go through the process of the destruction. Jesus, I myself in the form of a man, Jesus is going to take that on Jim's behalf. Now that makes Christianity qualifiably different.
It's a profound thing. There was, I've studied a lot of the old writers and stuff. And one of the things that I read one time, a long time ago, it said, there's nothing more profound than the notion that a perfect, uncreated God could take on the form of man to redeem sinful and unholy man and then make him holy. And we are the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus, not because of something we do, but because of what he did. And that, so then the question is, is there nothing I can do to attain? Is there not some system of works? Can I not do something to win God's favor?
There's nothing you can do to earn merit with God, but there is something we have to do to accept his forgiveness, and that is we have to make a decision to repent and accept the relationship with him. It's as if, and this is a common illustration, and I can't even take credit for this illustration. This is one that I use a lot. Somebody's in a courtroom, and they've committed this crime, and the penalty is life imprisonment or something like $500,000 fine. And the person's incapable of paying it. They don't want to be in prison for life, but the judge takes compassion on them, says, do you feel bad about what you did? Yes, sir. Are you going to do it anymore? No, sir. Because I'll tell you what I'll do, the judge says. And he gets out his checkbook and writes out a check for $500,000. Says, justice has to be done. Somebody has to pay this penalty. I'm going to pay it on your behalf. Take this to the clerk. And once you deposit it, you're free. Now, what goes through our mind? Well, this is too good to be true. I don't deserve this. Well, we don't deserve it. And it may sound too good to be true, but just because it sounds good doesn't mean it's not true. On the other hand, what if somebody said, thank you, Your Honor, and as soon as I'm out of here, I'm going to go commit another crime? What would the judge do? He would withdraw the check. He'd say, I see you're not taking this seriously. So it's not that we do nothing. When the Bible says we're not saved by works, it means we don't earn merit with God. But we do need to make a decision to let this person run our life. Another situation, illustration I like to use, imagine you're in an orphanage. Somebody comes along and says, there's a rich, powerful man. He wants to adopt you as his son or as his daughter, whatever the case may be. If you go home with him, he's now going to take custody of your life. Now, you'll still have your personality and your dreams and your talents, and he loves those things about you. But there will be a perimeter put around your life. There will be rules. There will be disciplines. There will be a curfew. He's going to take responsibility for the way you turn out. Now, if you don't want to go with him, you don't have to. If you want, you can stay here and be an orphan the rest of your life. But if you sign the dotted line, your life is no longer yours. Christianity is signing the dotted line. Christianity is accepting the check on our behalf, but with the decision that we're now going to change. That doesn't mean we become perfect overnight. That doesn't mean we never sin again. It does mean we're committed to a process where the Spirit of God comes into our soul and takes responsibility for raising us and changing us.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that illustration. Final thing. When I was just a very young Christian, I heard a man say, you know, Buddha died and went to the grave. Confucius died and went to the grave. Muhammad died and went to the grave. Jesus died and he got up again. I'll pick a winner every time.
Yeah, and that, of course, is when we get into what's different about it, too, is the verification.
Yeah.
And the resurrection of Christ.
Yes.
Is as well testified as any other event in history.
And
that sounds fantastic.
That
if that sounds fantastic to somebody, it's because they have not yet studied that and looked into it. Check
but
it out.
Look into it. It's absolutely essential, isn't it? If we don't believe in the resurrection, then we're not a whole lot different from some of the other systems.
Exactly. And there are some people who, like I said, they call themselves Christians, but they don't take the resurrection seriously, or they've never actually had a real, genuine relationship, which the Bible calls becoming born again.
Yes.
Well, my friend, it's always good to talk to you.
And it always flies by so fast.
It sure does. Well, hey, my son's living in Texas now. I hope the two of you will get a chance to connect. I'm sure he'd enjoy meeting you.
Good deal. All right. Thanks,
all right.
Bob.
Talk to you soon, Jim.
Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.